outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey.
Wayne, I have to say, your pink polo today really highlights the tan that you got in Hawaii this last couple of weeks.
Okay, first of all, it's salmon. It's not pink.
It is totally pink.
It is salmon.
That is completely, that is as pink as pink gets.
To be clear, it is salmon, but thank you. I don't know about the tan. I pretty much stay in the shade the entire time in Hawaii. I do not lay on a beach unless I'm under a palm tree shade or something else. I'm slathered in sunscreen if I'm in the water.
So how was your trip? You and Sarah decided you guys were going to go on a walkabout in Hawaii just to get away from the house process and everything.
It's called a walkabout? Is that what it's called?
Well, an adventure in Hawaii, a journey, a rest.
It was fun to get back and see how much progress has been made on our house. That was fun. So the part of going away to let that happen was probably pretty good. So we're not over there every day bugging people. But, oh gosh, the time in Hawaii was special, precious. I even use the word sacred. It was way more than just a vacation. It was just a chance to be together with this newer version of Sarah and get her out of the normal habitat and the apartment and the all the appointments and things we engage when we're home. And it was special in every way it could have been special. We even went over on Sunday and hung out with some believers in on Oahu. So
oh, really?
We did a thing like that just so we could. They've been wanting us to come for a while. So we're here. We'll go up there for the day. So we did.
So were you at a resort the whole time? Or what is vacation for the two of you now as you and Sarah are enjoying a new season of your marriage? What does vacation look like for the two of you, or rest look like for the two of you?
Oh, it's probably the normal thing people would think of with rest. You know, we hang out at the room resort. We still walk 5-6 miles a day. I do that. Sarah does a little bit less. We read. We just talk. We walk through shopping. We have to figure out where we're eating dinner. Yeah, just the stuff of life and laying out a lot in a shady spot, reading and talking. And what this involved, though, what was unique about this trip was, as we're getting ready to go, I said to Sarah one day, I said, hey, are you going to snorkel with me? And the answer is, I ask her that every time we go. And the answer is always, are you kidding? Or no way or whatever. And she goes, I might.
Oh.
And I said, okay. Are you serious? She goes, I might try it. Yeah, really? And she's, because I mean, this was one of the disasters of our marriage. This is one of my deepest regrets.
Whoa. First,
I've been doing some teaching in Hawaii and got used to snorkeling on this beach near the YWAM base there when I did some teaching. And Sarah came over with me one time, took her down there, and all excited about snorkeling. We'd talked about it. She's excited. Rented gear, got in the pond, out in the children's beach, and man, there's turtles there. There's all kinds of stuff. And I'm in the water looking at these beautiful fish, and I'm looking for Sarah, and I don't see her. So I pop my head up out of the water, and she's standing about 30 yards back at shore, just without her mask on, without the snorkel, without the fin. She's just holding all that stuff. And so I said, what's the matter? She said, I don't know. I can't do it. I can't do it. I said, you can't do what? I can't put my face in the water. You can't put your face in the water. There's beautiful fish down here. And I had no empathetic connection to her. Because we've always talked about this. We talked about taking scuba classes in college. We never got around to it, but I had no idea. And I don't know if Sarah did either because she hadn't been around it. She has a real fear of the water and a fear of putting her face in the water and breathing through a tube. And that we see how some of this is very much linked to the trauma she'd been part of. But I was like, what are you talking about? This is life 101. Put your face in the water, you know, and breathe through the tube. And I was not a kind man that day because we just rented and, you know, we didn't have a lot of money and I had rented this gear and she's not using it. So, this is one of the not good moments of my life that I've apologized relentlessly for. So we rent the stuff. We go out to this beach and we're trying to get in the water. And just even being in the ocean for Sarah, not comfortable. Mm-hmm. She never had swim lessons. So she can dog paddle. She can stay afloat, but she's never learned to swim.
Okay.
And it's all kind of scary to her. It's all claustrophobic when you think about a mask and breathing. And so she's staying on the beach and she said, why don't you just go ahead and go out there and I'll kind of get used to it here. And I'm going, okay, you're going to get in the water. So she gets up to about her waist and unfortunately, she's standing in the worst possible place where the waves are crashing on the beach. Yeah, not big waves, but you're getting bumped around. And I said, you know, you probably need to either come out or go in. And I'm wanting to encourage her, and I'm not wanting to pressure her. I'm really trying to find that line. So we ended up being too rough there for her. So we found another beach and a couple of days later, and she went out with that. And this was such a sacredly beautiful moment. She wanted me to just go and see the reef first while she kind of got used to the idea again, getting in the water. So I did. And it's kind of cold. So Sarah's not into cold water. It was a little cool. That was a challenge. Getting in the ocean is a challenge. And then I did a little surveying where we would go if she comes out so we could find some pretty stuff. And then I came back to her and I said, what do you think? And she goes, I want to try it. And I'm going, are you okay? And she's kind of anxious. And I just said, well, you're standing again in the worst possible place. Can you come out a little bit further? You can't do anything back further toward the beach. Maybe can you come? Again, not wanting to pressure, but wanting to coax. Yeah. And she finally came out a little further and lost touch with the ground. And so we had a moment with that. Like, how did we get? And I mean, as soon as she lost touch with the ground, we were in water over my head too. Her legs go around my waist. Clamping like a boa constrictor, man. She's all and climbing up my chest. And I'm going, babe, just let's relax. I said, do you want to go back? She said, no. I said, okay, you're welcome to go back anytime. And we just kind of got that enough to she could let go and not feel the bottom of the ocean. And then slipped the mask on and she started to panic. So she pulled it off again. I said, look, there's no pressure here. You do not have to do this. And she said, I want to do it. So makes long story short, over an hour and a half, just baby steps toward finally getting the fins on. And then her feet kind of rise up, which forces her face in the water, which is then the first time she hears herself breathe through the mask. And we had practiced in the hotel room, but the first time she heard it, oh my gosh, she came right out of the water. And you're like, okay. And I said, let's just calm. Let's just relax. And I said, no hurry. We can go back anytime you want to. And just finally calmed again. I said, do you want to try it? She said, I really do. And we did get mask on, snorkel on. We swam out about 40, 50 yards over the reef. And she was grabbing onto my shirt for dear life. She was just on my shirt dragging. And we saw fish, we saw stuff, and first time she'd ever seen it. And I came up out of the, I could feel her tap me. So I came up out of the water and she's just, man, she's in tears. She's crying. I said, what are you feeling? She said that I'm proud of myself for doing this. And I thought, that's sweet. And then she said, and I'm so grateful to you. I'm grateful how patient you were with me. And so she was crying. We just hung there in the water about maybe 12 foot of water and had a moment just on the beach of just tenderness of this was a big, big deal for Sarah, big. And then we went back to shore and she got out and then we went snorkeling two other times and different places and different moments of apprehension and navigated through it and to watch her take on her fears. Only because she desired to. It wasn't like I need to take on this fear. I got to win over the fear for whatever. I want to snorkel. And so I'm going to keep finding my way to that. And then being able to share that. We've just never been able to our whole married life. And this is such a different woman and such a holy space to be inside, to watch her address her fears, to be able to coach her without pressuring her, just be able to be alongside her and how far do you want to go? How far do you don't? It felt very godly to me. That's the way God's treated me with things in my life. You know, you want to go further or you don't? Don't have to.
Yeah.
And I loved being that for Sarah.
Well, it's funny. Like you sent me a brief text message kind of hinting at this story while you guys were still gone. And I actually really smiled when I read through the text message because Jess and I had a very similar experience on our honeymoon. Jess, she has her own challenge with open water and there's some insecurities there and some fears there for sure. And so we had a very similar experience and just as her spouse and especially like this, we were 2 weeks into marriage. And for those of you who don't know our story, from the time that we started dating to the time that we got married, it was just under a year. So there's not a ton of relational context there.
Nope.
And so here we are, like in the ocean, and her facing that deep fear. And man, it's to get to walk alongside of somebody that we love deeply as they take on a fear and see victory in it for themselves. And they invite us into that fear and that overcoming of that fear as a participant. It's an incredible gift. Right. I mean, to see the joy in Jess's eyes the first time that she saw the fish and saw, like, was able to put her head in the water and see something and not come up in like a hyperventilating space. Man, it was such a joy. And we eventually even did one where we did the edge of the reef. We did a snorkeling tour that had three different depths of water. And the final one was one where it was like the drop off and it turned into the abyss and dark, and she was able to do it with me. Now she was clinging on to me, like it sounds like Sarah was as well.
I was glad I had a shirt on so I didn't have fingernails ripping through my flesh or something.
Yeah. That's where the foundation, I know. So you and I had talked about talking today about resilient trust and kind of introducing that idea as a part of the God-shaped life. And I think about that, and that's, I feel like that's how the foundations of resilient trust are built, right? Like you said before, like that's how God initially invites us into it, is like, okay, you want to put your foot in the water? Okay. It even coaxing and encouraging and fostering the space to where they're willing to leave the beach, that they're even willing to stand, that I'm willing to stand on the beach with the snorkel and the fins in my hand, even just considering it, not even stepping into the water.
Every
and
step.
Yet there's that. Yeah. Every step.
And these are major fears for Sarah: facing the water, hearing her own breathing through a tube, not being able to breathe out of her nose, open water, like you said, not touching the ground. All of it. And just watching her over an hour and a half. And not only do I see the change in Sarah, who a year ago would not have even considered ever in her whole life, she's never even considered wanting to snorkel, to having the desire, to willing to take the risk. And then the twofer is, I see how much I've changed since the last time I was in the water trying to snorkel with Sarah. Yeah. 'Cause there was no angst at all. I was not trying to get her to do it for me. I just wanted to be the kind of coach that would get her to experience what she wanted to do as much as she wanted to do, and to free her at every point to go back whenever she needed to. Which brings me to the best thing I heard this week.
Okay. What was the best thing you heard this week?
I mean, I heard a lot of great things in my conversation with Sarah, but this is a book I was reading, finished while I was over there, heard before. It's called This Here Flesh by Cole Arthur Riley. I've referred to her before on a couple of quotes, but this one really is right in this wheelhouse. You can't talk someone into their liberation. Telling someone to just get free is like telling someone to stop grinding their teeth in the night. It's not kindness. Freedom requires patience with ourselves, as it takes time to feel at peace if all you've ever known is insecurity. It's the process of your soul learning to trust again. Trust that it can rest and love and be still without being destroyed.
Oof.
That's so lovely.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, it's okay. So on that note, I have to read you the best thing that I heard this week.
Oh, cool.
And I got permission to be able to read this. This came from a letter from a friend. And they're in the process of really learning that trust as well, of what you literally just outlined with that quote. And this was a poem, and I'm going to read just some of it. But this was a poem that they shared with me that I think ties in beautifully with it.
That they wrote, or a poem that's been encouraging to them?
That they wrote.
Okay.
Uncaged. Unyielding freedom coursing through my veins, hope lit, fire set, no longer waiting with bated breath, setting out into the wind, blowing me off course again and again. There is no path, there is no set pace, just wind through the wilds, fear dripping from my face. It's coming out and being shed, and losing grip from heart and head, breathing hard, the work is deep. but further in the heart does sleep. Rest is found when deeply needed, and pillows carry tears untreated. But further in and further on, there are more stories being told. Whispered into hope and fire, lessening fear and calling to this child, whispering home, home. Hmm. And just to know the context of their story. And I mean, for me, like listening to the idea of facing the wind, of blowing me, sometimes the wind does blow me off course again and again, and yet being able to come back to that path. I loved the comment or the line where it says, there is no set pace, just winding through the wilds, fear dripping from my face. That like, oof, like that line to me, that's where that resilient trust is coming in, where it's okay to not have some forced pace or expectation, but to be kind to your heart and allow that timing as God leads it, as God draws you into that God-shaped life, into that resilient trust. There is no set five easy step plan, or this is going to take place in a year, or this is your next three-step plan. No, it's what is the pace of the heart, and what is Father drawing me into and allowing him to build that trust, me not knowing what pace my heart actually needs. Because sometimes it can be an experience like Sarah went through where, you know, there was a lot leading up to it, a lot of prep work that God was doing in her heart. And then boom, there's like this really intense time of growth and restoration and healing. And if you tried to manufacture either one of those paces of time, I think it would have been unkind to her heart. And yet being able to allow God to draw us into that process and that relational space is just, man, it's incredible.
Yeah, and I think this is where Christianity has gotten discipleship so incredibly wrong, by creating systems of thought or ritual or practice or discipline, and you impose that on your life. You take some artificial construct, and now you try to put on the clothes, almost like David putting on Saul's armor, you know? Yeah. It doesn't work, it doesn't fit, and I think we've done that with just this cookie-cutter, mass-produced attempt to make Christians in the world. Instead of giving them a journey with a transformative Father, we instead impose on them a set of rules and disciplines and activities and doctrines that fail them, that they have to pretend they fit when they don't fit, instead of having a genuine journey with Jesus inside their heart, setting the pace, leading and guiding them, inviting them. They'd come as far as they want. Like the first day we went out, we didn't get in. Sarah got up to her waist, she just couldn't, and partly it's the beach, partly it was just let's try another place. But it was okay to say, okay, we didn't get there today, but we got further than we've ever been. So now we'll go. And I know when I talk to so many people, and when we talk about trust, people are more comfortable talking about that. We're really talking about faith. We could use the word faith here. But faith for so many Christians is not a growing sense of resiliency and transformation and change. It's an on-off switch. I either have faith or I don't. Yes. And I'm worried and fearful over here. So obviously I don't have faith. So now I got to start all over. And it's just this either or, black or white, all or nothing construct doesn't serve people well in the transformative journey. Because the God-shaped life is really let God draw you into his way of life. And I'm doing the letting. That's about all I'm doing. I'm not doing the pretending or the disciplining or the trying to get this right or that right. I'm letting him draw me into a space that changes me. And in both the quotes we read, the link between insecurity, trust, and rest, the trust and rest are the same reality. Where I trust, I rest. And where I don't trust, I don't rest. And insecurity is a major thing. No matter where your insecurities were set, by trauma, by upbringing, by just the chaos of the world we live in, where you are insecure is where God's trust and this resiliency and God shaping and desiring us to know we are safe inside of him is something that takes quite a growth curve. It takes a long season, and there is no pace that you should go at to get there, you know? If you're not, if you're snorkeling on your honeymoon in your 20s or snorkeling at 69 in Hawaii, the fact that you're doing, I will never forget that hour and a half on the beach with my, some of the sacred memories of our marriage is just watching her take on some stuff with Jesus and me being alongside her. So beautiful.
Yeah. I had a conversation with a dear friend this week and they were lamenting about wanting to genuinely grow in relationship, community, find some connections. They basically were asking, how do I engage with this God-shaped life? Like, I want to experience it. I want to step into this. I want, but where do I go to do that? And their feedback was, I've tried several quote unquote mega churches. And they were like, Kyle, they are all the same. It's like they were literally written by the same playbook. They have phenomenal lighting systems. They have incredible music. They've got really peppy, almost concert quality experience. And then they've got a really charismatic, dynamic individual that comes and gives one of the best sculpted self-help talks ever. And they're like, I've been anonymous for months, if not years, in these settings. And so, like, where do I go? What, like, just their frustration of what does it look like to connect with other people that are engaging in that God-shaped life? And even the idea of what does it look like to talk to other people that are building resilient trust in learning what it means to rest in that, in learning what it means to, because I mean, I hear about the other interesting thing about faith, right? Is, well, if you have the faith of a mustard seed, you can move mountains. Well, then I know there's the comment of, well, I must not have very much faith because I can't move a mountain. You know, I think I have faith and yet I don't see mountains moving. And so I must just, and a mustard seed is so small, you can barely even see it. So I must suck at life, you know? And, how it just sucks the life and joy out of the journey and the experience.
That to me is where we, again, have not served faith well. The idea of faith and the religious construct I grew up in, it's pretty much another religious ritual to give to God. I've got to give God faith. I've got to come up with faith. It's completely disconnected from relationship. It's not trust in Him. It's a thing I use to manipulate Him. So if I have faith of the mustard seed, I can get this to happen. Well, who hasn't tried to move a mountain, man? I lived in the shadow of the Sierra Nevadas when I was a kid, and I'd take scriptures like that seriously. So I'd say, okay, this would be a moment. If I could move that mountain right over there to right over there, I think that'd really do some Jesus stuff in the world, and people would have to, you know, whatever. Yeah. We've all done that stuff, or even get it off the trivial and down to, my wife's dying of cancer, or my child is, or, you know, there's somebody's in a car accident and barely hanging on to life in the hospital. And now we're supposed to move mountains and we're praying and we're trying to give whatever this faith is to God to get Him to act, instead of the faith that draws me into His presence, into His heart, saying, Jesus, what are you doing here? And how, and that, to me, when it talks about faith moving a mountain, the mountain is not necessarily that thing on the horizon over there. The mountain is in my heart, moves me to be inside of Him. And inside of Him now, can God heal? Yes. Does He always? No. What is He doing in this situation? How do I respond to Him if He doesn't heal? How does my faith? I was with someone this week that's going through just a horrible loss in their own life. And they're losing connection with God. Has God prepared me for a life of misery? Is that why this is happening to me? Whoa, 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 whoa. The idea, I think we talk about a resilient trust. I think there's two things that make that very difficult for us. One, we grow up in the chaos of a broken creation.
Yeah.
And the second thing that makes it difficult is if you've grown up in Christian teaching, it kind of says we can make order out of the chaos by our prayers and by God's activity, that God will make sure nothing bad happens to us. And so there's books like When Bad Things Happen to Good People. Well, what do you do with that? Because you're supposed to say goodness was somehow supposed to earn us a pass on the chaos of creation. And so the expectations of Christians in the face of the chaos of the world, of sickness, of disease, it's not that Christians don't have accidents. It's, you know, the scripture where God, many are the afflictions of the righteous, but God delivers him out of them all, is not saying every circumstance in your life will conform to your comfortable desires. I've lived too long to know that's not true. I've lived inside of Jesus and tried to get him to change things that he didn't change, and instead was changing us in the midst of it, because there's a different way to live inside his reality that allows us to be in the chaos of the creation without trying to manage it by our own preferences and desires. But that's what I talk about, the God-shaped life. Unless there's love, rest, and play enough to like sense his movement in your life and then follow that movement, you can actually be in, because I was thinking about this person that I talked to this week going through this horrible loss, and they wanted to talk to me because of what happened a year ago and the loss that I experienced and the sense of what does the future look like? I mean, I can tell you every day in Hawaii, I'm very aware that this almost never happened again. The week, 10 days we got in Hawaii a year ago looked like it would never happen.
Yeah.
That any kind of time with Sarah was off the rails. And they say, now, how do you find peace at a moment like that? Well, this is what I love about resilient trust. There were hours and days of not much peace at all, just gut-wrenching pain. Yeah. But there's also the invitation of God into that. Come share this with me. Hold this with me. And the recognition, I said it in my heart, whether she comes back or not, you are my God, and you have joy for me. And the letter we read from Jenny a couple of weeks ago about God doesn't violate other people's autonomy, which is a lot of why the chaos of the world we live in. People make choices, like Sarah said today, people make choices every day that are hurtful to other people, and you can't pull it back. You can't change it that they're that way. You've got to find a way to navigate inside of God, even if someone who you thought was your best friend is telling lies about you. You've got to know how to navigate that space with Jesus. Yeah. And not, my only hope is he fixes this. Well, hopefully he does, but not always, because he's not the one in charge of that. That's the person who's doing the lying, the mocking, the whatever. And so learning to, my hope is never in Sarah coming back. I mean, I hoped that happened, but if it didn't, is my life over? Is there not a God who's bigger than Sarah's choices, whether they were godly or whether they were just trauma-based, whatever, is God bigger than that? Does God have a future for us to navigate? And it is, joy have to always be circumstantial. Do you find Jenny's words? I was furious at him, and now I madly love him because he's this way. I mean, that's just great language. Because resilient faith is not every day I trust him more. It's there are moments and hours I'm in that wheelhouse of trust. And then what changes? It's not me. I didn't change, but I'm in a circumstance now that's bigger than my trust was. So now I've got fear. Yeah. I've got anxiety. I'm looking at the unknown future going, oh gosh, I don't know what to do there. And then resiliency of faith is, and this is all those 5 weeks that Sarah was gone, was God, how do you meet me inside this space? Whether she comes back or not, that's the resiliency of, no, I don't trust you to handle this the way I want. I'm in great pain because I've lost something precious to me. And grief is not sin. It isn't. Sorrow is not sin. It's just, and it's not fear and it's not anxiety. It's, I lost something beautiful and I don't know that I'm ever going to get it back. And now my faith needs to be bigger than the fact that she comes back or not. And that's where extremity gives us the chance to grow. I'm either going to lean into that space, which I didn't do well as a younger man. It was always, God, what's wrong with you? After all I've done with you, you think you could do what? I've given you so much. And now I'm asking the one stupid little thing over here, and you can't even give it to me. And that person over there, not even following you, they already have it. And, you know, all the stuff we do to lean out of resilient trust. And then I think the resiliency part is not that it's not challenged. It's not that you don't lose sight of it sometimes. Someone said to me, I'm beginning to doubt God. Good. Now, deal with that. Don't just throw them aside and run off, as many have. But it's that invitation, okay, God, this is not what I expected from you. This is not what I was taught, that you would run to my aid and fix everything the way I want it. So now what do I do? And how does trust take hold in those spaces? And again, that's, Jesus has to be the author and finisher of our faith. it can't be me. It's not something he's asking me to give him. It's something he wants to give to me. Yeah. And he wants to teach me.
Yeah, I wonder if, you know, I think about back to James, and I wonder if that's what he was getting at as he's writing to the believers and saying, no, this, your resiliency is built in this. When you're facing those challenges, when you're facing those trials, when you're navigating the chaos of a broken, an incredibly broken world, what does it look like to have that trust, that hope, that relational foundation be solidified in the midst of the chaos? What does that look like?
And finding that, then the hope is not in how my life is going to sort out from here. Yeah. What joy is ahead for me? That's not where resilient trust lies. It lies in the fact that he becomes my known, bigger than all my unknowns. Not he's become the fixer of my unknowns. And that's a hard break to make, because we've kind of grew up with this God with his little magic wand, can't wait to make our life perfect. And for most part, our lives go fairly well. So you can sell that kind of idea of God. And then if you have a need, well, it's your fault. You obviously did something wrong. If you had prayed before you drove off in your car, you wouldn't have had that accident, or you wouldn't have had this. I mean, all the stupid things said in the name of Jesus and Christianity that create this idea of God as success ethic. So when your life is good, you can feel blessed and great, but you don't know, have a clue how to follow God when the C word comes up and you have cancer, or you, someone you love, or your marriage falls apart, or whatever. You don't have it. You don't have a resilience, because your idea of God was that he would fix everything to keep me contented. Instead of, no, I'm sorry, you're in a very broken world, and I love you, and I'm for you, and I can walk you through this. And there's some things I'll get to fix, and some things we'll fix inside of you, and you don't even get to choose that. I'm the one that knows best. So life is going to unfold for us. And I love the resilience. It's the dance. Here's how I see trust in my life. It's the dance between my personality, my desires, and my passion, mingling with God's person, God's desires, God's passion. Now, it's not, those are not mutual in the sense that they carry equal weight. There's a lot of my passions and desires that are unknowingly destructive. I have no idea that they would be, but they will be.
Yeah.
God's are always good. And when we mingle, it's not God absorbing our personality, it's not that God gets to win everything, although he does, because he's incredibly good at it. But it's the mingling of that and the dance of learning how to live inside this understanding of God's nature, big enough to get me through the chaos of this age and into the age to come. He's capable of doing that. And there's always a route through whatever we face, whatever disappointment, whatever shock, whatever thing comes into our life. There is a route through that. And it may be in sorrow and pain and great hurt, but that can, as Paul said, our momentary light afflictions lead us to an eternal weight of glory. That's, and I think on this journey, you know, being with Sarah this last 10 days made everything from a year ago way more than worth it. What it's done in her, what it's done in our relationship. We have a completely different way of living. The eternal weight of glory is not worthy to be compared with the momentary light affliction of a year ago. But you know what? It didn't seem momentary and it didn't seem light at the time. It was excruciating. It was all encompassing. And yet now, when the fruit of God's journey through it, and this is definitely made easier by the fact that we both got what we wanted, which was to be reconnected to each other. This would be a very different podcast if Sarah and I were not back together yet, or it didn't look like we ever were. This would be a very different podcast. But I promise you, we'd have to lean into the same space. What does it mean to trust God's goodness in the midst of my anguish? And we tried to answer that in the Shaq story with, you know, what about Missy? Missy's gone. And I was with her too. And we never think that God was with her too. Think, oh, the horrible things that must happen to Missy. No, God was with her. So there was grace. There was sustenance. There was whatever. If Sarah and I were still apart and Sarah's trauma had won the day, I would still want God's grace to be in Sarah. I would. I would want him to love her. I would want him to hold her. I would want him to lead her to life, even if it didn't include me. I do. But we did get that element of it back. So
yeah,
that joy is easier to understand now, but a year ago, it you know, less than 1% chance that it would.
I think this is where the big box store church experience falls short, right? Because gosh, that it's so individualized per person, the wisdom and the direction and the nudges that God is going to offer and give and coax you into during that time and that space and that process. You can't pre-prescribe that. You can't craft that. You can't come up with some plan that five easy steps. Wow. Easy steps that are going to get you through that. You just can't. That's where it has to be connected to relationship, right? Like it can't be separated from relationship. It has to be connected to relationship.
Yeah. And if we saw that instead of like the moment I get saved, then I just enter into this land where everything ought to be working out good for me, is that we are saved as we are marooned in the chaos of a broken world. Salvation doesn't change the fact that we're marooned in the chaos. It only changes the direction through which we'll go through, negotiate the chaos. And I love that God gives us that opportunity to deal with that. And yet there's something in the human psyche. Scientists talk about this when we're looking at clouds or looking at things. We're always looking for patterns. Our brain wants to organize things in patterns, because I think there's something about humanity that realizes we weren't built for chaos. We weren't. So I'm trying to organize things, but our attempts to manipulate the chaos to our preferences doesn't work, destroys us, and destroys people around us. So our attempts to do this fail. But if we found out that when the time you come to Christ, or the time you decide to follow him, you are marooned in the chaos. And now he's going to invite you into what's true and what's real and what's alive. And that's no easier than negotiating a snorkeling event if you've never snorkeled before. And if you have a fear of the water, and if you have a panic mechanism, if you feel claustrophobic or constrained, and now God's inviting you into it. I look back at that when the whole thing at the church I was at that announced my resignation when I hadn't resigned. I look back on that now going, boy, that was good training right there, because God told me he would be responsible for my reputation. I was humiliated by it. I felt like, gosh, here, I should have had the power. I could have held on to it. Yeah. So that was, but then to see how God worked over a decade or more and the relationships God's healed, the things that God's changed, it's just that you go, okay, so then when the Shaq debacle happens, same thing. God's bigger than this. I don't know how he's bigger than this. Now I'm in a multi-million-dollar lawsuit to somebody I just helped with a book. That makes no sense. And God, are you bigger than this now? Are you? And then he is. That sorts out. Not completely, not to great healing. Yeah. And then this thing with Sarah and the thing inside my family. There's other things that have happened where you go, when God keeps finding you a way through, that builds something for next time. And then God finds you a way through. And your question about where do I go for this? And I tell you, in my life, it has never been to an event. It's never been to a book. It's been to people God put in my life. There's people, Dave Coleman, to Kevin Smith in Australia, the people God put in my life at various times of extremity, where their trust in God bled into my life. I could say, oh my gosh, you can trust God with that. I can trust God with this. I knew with my friend Kevin, first time I was with him in Australia, I spent 10 days with him. And then when I left there, I knew when things would come at me, my trust meter has bounced upward just in being with him. And then it would settle back down, but not here. It would come back to here. And then next time I was with Kevin, and then it would settle back. And just it's really a way to learn faith, of just watching someone else who's living a life at risk, seeing God care for them. Really helps you know that God will care for you no matter what. The growth that happens when you're around people who have a resilient trust, that's the best place to learn it right there. Especially if they're not trying to make you pretend. This first quote I read about telling someone to just get free is like telling them to stop grinding their teeth at night. It's not kindness. I think that's because they're not going to treat you that way. Anybody that's learned some resilient trust knows it's a gift God gives, and I can help you be in a space to let him do this in you. I'm not asking you to pretend, and I can't give you a book of three ways to go do this and you'll have it. It's not possible. Yeah. So you're going to get to grow in the relationship. But if we understood we're marooned in the chaos still after we're saved, now the transfer to the kingdom of light happens inside the chaos, not suddenly you're put on this high holy mountain over here. All is good. You'll never have another problem. And you could pray anything away that you want to, just if you learn to pray good enough. All that such an illusion and such a lie. And it leaves so many shipwrecked, disillusioned people that thinks that because God didn't come through the way I wanted, God is not who he claims to be. And to me, that's the fallacy of Christianity in our day, is it's created a God as a success deity. And if you don't have that, then obviously you're not walking closely to him. And if you have it, even if you've lied and cheated your way to get there, you must be blessed by God because you have what you want. And that's such a lie. It's the power of this relationship of love, rest, and play inside our pain and watching how God handles those things and then being able to look back with a track record of going, you really are. The known God with me is better than the unknown. I had this talk with Sarah too in Hawaii. The whole idea of watching Sarah learn to snorkel reminded me of Peter walking on the water. Same thing. Jump out of the boat, give it a shot. You're sinking. Jesus teaching Peter faith. Most of us, it's a test. He passed it for a while and he failed it. And
then he fails. Yeah.
Buzzard. Instead of, no, this is how God shapes us in his life. This is how he teaches us. And if you let yourself be drawn into the way God shapes us, a life that God shapes, it is so worth living, because now I know this. I know I have a life in Jesus that's stronger than the lies of my family and stronger than the departure of Sarah. I know God is bigger than those two things. And that, to me, when I look back at the Wayne that was around, say, even 20 years ago, I think these things would have killed me. And they don't. I accept that the world is chaos. I accept that I have no idea what could happen to me tomorrow. I don't live in expectation, some doomsday expectation, but I have no idea. There's nothing secure except him. And he is completely secure. There's nothing that can happen to me, including our country being invaded and overrun by enemies bent on evil and darkness. There's a way God would have for us to navigate that, like he did the first group of believers who grew up in a very hostile environment. And they didn't have a success deity to worship. They had the living God to walk with them through whatever life threw at them.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.